Good morning. My name is Jim Graham, and I'm chairperson of the Metro WMATA Board of Directors. I now call to order the 1,347th meeting of the Board of Directors. The date is December the 17th, 2009. The time is 11:35 a.m. We are starting a little bit late due to the substantial agenda that was dealt with on our Customer Services Committee. Now, our first order of business is the public comment period. We have four public commenters, starting with Ms. Jackie Jeter, who, of course, is the president of ATU. Local 689. Is Ms. Jeter here, please? Will you come forward? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to first start off by wishing everyone happy holidays. I know that we are engaged in a lot of work that has to be done regardless, but it's good for us to take a chance and or take an opportunity to think about the holidays and what it entails. So I wish all of you that. I'd like to begin by saying that even though I missed the actual comments this morning, Mr. Cato and I have been in conversation of late concerning the safety initiatives that need to take place at WMATA. And I can tell you wholeheartedly that the union, on behalf of the union, we agree with that stance. We agree with the steps that he's taking, and we partner with him in making sure that the system is safe for not only the riding public, but also the employees here, because although it may be somewhat distasteful to, as a reminder, but it is the employees that belong to my union who are losing their lives. And I need to reiterate that, because whatever partnership we go into, it has to be something that's more than just calling us when you need us or calling us when it's the politically correct thing to do. It has to be a true partnership, a partnership between the authority and the union. The union plays an intricate part. And I can also say to the board that that all of this is a two-way street. And there are a lot of initiatives on the table that need to be addressed, that still need to be addressed. And I offer, just like the olive branch that was offered from the general manager, I offer this to the board that we need to sit down and discuss some of those open issues that is causing a lot of distrust where the authority is concerned and the employees. So on behalf of those employees, I stand before you and say we would welcome any discussion that needs to take place, ongoing discussions that will take place, and the local is always here, and everybody has my phone number.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jeter. And may I, on behalf of the, if you just wait, just there may be other comments or questions, but on behalf of the Board of Directors, we congratulate you on your reelection as president of ATU Local 689, which is so very important to this authority and to its workforce. We wish you all the best in your new term in office.
Thank you very much.
I would, in terms of your specific suggestion, it is a suggestion that I, as one member of this board, is willing to consider. I would ask you for the opportunity for the board to discuss this issue on your specific suggestion, so that once we have a better understanding of what the board's view is on this, we could get back to you with the general manager. But we heard your suggestion, and I think it's something that we certainly want to discuss amongst ourselves.
Sure.
Let me just make sure there are no other. Yes, Ms. Hewlett.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, would like to congratulate you, Ms. Jeter, on your election and wish you the best. And I'd also like to comment. I was very taken with the general manager's comments earlier this morning. We all listened intently. And about the things that we have to do to accomplish, to promote safety and to have a much better safety record. And he put a number of things on the table, but one of which was working closely with the union. He said he was working very, very closely with you, and as you just said, it's a two-way street and it has to be a true partnership. But I commend the way you have come to both of you, the way you've come together, and I commend the union and the way you are stepping up to in this effort that affects not our employees and it affects all of our riders. And I think that's a major, very first-class step, notwithstanding any differences that we may have, for you to step up like that, because that's paramount. And I want to commend you for that and commend the union for that. I think that's it's very, very major, and it's an absolute necessity if we're going to move forward safely.
Thank you. I can say for myself, and I'm sure Mr. Cato, I think we pride ourselves in being able to discuss problems, even if we don't agree, to discuss them and come to some kind of resolution, and a resolution that's good for not only him and I, but also all of the employees here at WMATA. Thank you.
Thank you again. And now, Mayor Yule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and then thank you, Ms. Jeter. And I just wanted to express thanks to you. I shared a letter, my comments in a letter to the chair, which I hope that he's received by now. The letter you sent to the members of the board expressing your willingness to continue to work with us and the general manager addressing not only the safety concerns, but as we are going through the budget process and the ideas, suggestions, recommendations that your organization has offered up. So I want to thank you very much for that, because certainly we need the support of the workforce no matter what we attempt to do, and that your partnership and collaboration is very essential. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Are there further comments or questions for Ms. Jeter? Again, congratulations, and we look forward to working with you in your new term. All right. Now we have three representatives from the Riders Advisory Council. Our first commentator is Carol Carter Walker. Is Ms. Walker? Yes, there's Ms. Walker. Please come forward. She will be followed by David Alpert and then by Penny Everline. Is Mr. Alpert here? Could you stand closer to the microphone with Ms. Everline, please, so that you're ready to immediately begin your testimony? We're happy to have you here, Ms. Walker.
Good morning. I'm Carol Carter Walker, appointed to the RAC in September 2008 and eagerly hoping for reappointment. I live in the District of Columbia. I am here as chair of the governance working group established by the Riders Advisory Council in June 2009 to improve governance of the RAC in order to enhance its effectiveness. Members of this governance working group represented every jurisdiction. We held open meetings and brought our recommendations back to the full RAC at every meeting from July to November. Additional changes were made based on feedback by the full RAC. All members came to the December meeting at which the recommended bylaws for approval by this body were approved by us by a significant majority. I'm here to speak specifically on behalf of the changes in the leadership of the RAC. The changes, if approved, would implement a model of collaborative leadership. First, the recommended bylaw changes provide for specific roles for the vice chairs rather than having them simply chair meetings in the absence of the chair. The vice chairs would be empowered to work as a team with the chair to develop our agendas, represent the BRAC at board and committee meetings, and focus on establishing relationship with the board members from their jurisdictions. Second, the recommended bylaws would formally enlarge the pool from which the chair might come by not requiring that the chair of the RAC be from the same jurisdiction as the chair of this body. The jurisdictional alignment is a custom not codified in the bylaws and only institutionalized in the most recent years of the RAC's existence. The RAC believes that this custom arbitrarily limits the pool of potential chairs so severely as to pass over willing, interested, and capable candidates and presses reluctant members into service. Third, the RAC is also proposing that in order to ensure equity in jurisdictional representation, that three vice chairs, one for each jurisdiction, rather than only two as at present, be established. This change, if approved, would allow the RAC chair to focus on representation of the RAC as a whole, knowing that a vice chair is available to focus on jurisdictional issues if and when necessary. We hope that you will give favorable consideration to these changes, and we request that, as a minimum, you approve those with which you currently feel comfortable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Walker. And now we will proceed to Mr. Alpert.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. The Riders Advisory Council needs your help to be the effective advisor to staff and the board it was designed to be. Its creators hoped that through meetings and committees, members would thoroughly learn about issues to craft valuable advice for you and staff. Instead, too often, we can simply only give first impression feedback in a very compressed time periods, making the RAC a kind of glorified focus group. Most importantly, over half the seats are either vacant, not standing for reappointment, or have turned over within the last 12 months. We need to build a better advisory board, and to do that, we need a committed chair. Unfortunately, after speaking to the experienced Maryland members, none desires the position this year. Their reluctance revolves around time. The chair's responsibilities are great. Other parts of our bylaw revisions would divide up this responsibility more equally among more officers. However, the immediate situation of the Maryland chairs is not our only reason for recommending this change. It is my fervent hope that one day soon, even a member with very limited time commitments could be an effective chair, benefiting from an established practice of dividing and delegating the responsibilities. Many members of the council share that vision. However, we cannot make that change overnight. Without these revisions, we will at best have an extremely reluctant chair. He or she can delegate to the vice chairs, but someone needs to craft that division of labor and ensure that everything gets done. Please approve these changes today to aid the council in this evolution and work with us to fill the vacant seats with members having the time and the interest to contribute more to the council. An independent and effective RAC also needs and deserves the freedom to choose its leader as its members think best. Nor will removing the rotation requirement help or harm any jurisdiction, because all members focus on the needs of riders and the system as a whole, not on individual jurisdictional interests. If you aren't comfortable fully approving this change, one option would be a 3-year trial period, enabling us to develop a more effective structure now while allowing you another chance to review this change in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Alpert. And now, Ms. Everline.
Hi, my name is Penny Everline. I'm from Arlington, Virginia, and have served on the Riders Advisory Council for over 2 years now. I've worked with three chairs, actually, since I joined the Riders Advisory Council. I understand that bylaws are not the most exciting topic, and there are many pressing issues facing Metro, and I want to obviously support you going on to those other issues as well. But the bylaws are important to the RAC. This is a body that wants to support the board as much as possible by providing good guidance, good feedback, and to do that, we really do need to consider these very thoughtful changes that my colleagues worked on for the Riders Advisory Council. And the last thought I would like to share is to consider the fact that the Riders Advisory Council provided this very thoughtful guidance on what we believe is best for the Riders Advisory Council. And if you do not take this guidance to heart and seriously consider it, then I really wonder what type of guidance we would be qualified to provide. So please do consider these changes. I do really believe that they are in the best interest of the RAC and of the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. And I want to thank you all and all the members of the Riders Advisory Council for taking this initiative, because when this board established the RIC, we wanted to have an active, engaged entity in terms of our riders, which would advise us. And obviously the RIC has had an experience to date that suggests to them the need for a certain amount of restructuring of this council. I think it's very important for this board to give this full consideration and careful consideration, because it's coming to us in a spirit of constructive contribution to making this system better. And so I'm quite sure this board is going to react in that spirit, and in a spirit of appreciation for the initiative that has been taken here. And we thank you very much for your testimony. Now, our next item of business is the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda? So moved. Is there a second?
Mr. Chair.
Just one second, please.
Second.
It's been moved by the chairman and seconded by Ms. Hewlett to approve the agenda. Is there discussion on the approval of the agenda? Mr. Benjamin.
Mr. Chair, having heard that...
It's okay. Got its little red line.
All right. Having heard the comments by the members of the Writers Advisory Council and taking them very seriously, and also taking very seriously your remarks that we do need to provide full and careful consideration of the proposals for bylaw changes, which I strongly endorse. I personally believe, and I think some other members of this board believe, that there are additional items that need to be discussed with members of the Writers Advisory Council and among board members before we move on this item. And I'd like to have those discussions with the Writers Advisory Council before we do act on it. So I request that this item be deferred until our next meeting.
It's been moved to defer the approval of revisions of the Writers Advisory Council bylaws. I do have a reaction to that, because I've had discussions with the members of the RAC who have been very involved in this. It would be preferable to me if we could defer only those major issues where we have a question which requires additional discussion, so that we can proceed to agree to the other amendments that have been presented to us. Would it be possible to take that approach rather than putting off the entire set of revisions?
Mr. Chair, that option is one that you presented to me just shortly, a little while ago. I have talked with some other board members, and the preference is to deal with them all at once and to defer at this time.
Well, that's your preference.
No, it was preference of myself and others on this board.
Well, let others speak for themselves, because I would prefer, as a member of this board, to only defer those matters where there are significant questions.
Mr. Chairman, I move that this item be deferred.
All right. It's been moved. Is there a second? It's been seconded by Mr. Albert. Is there discussion? Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Please record me as voting no on that matter. So I take it that we better have a show of hands, since we do have a dissent. All those in favor of the motion to defer the RAC revisions of their bylaws, raise your right hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those opposed, 1. So by a vote of 5-1, these bylaws are revisions are deferred to January. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That is my question.
Okay, deferred to the January meeting.
Okay.
Ms. Hewlett?
I was just asking to defer it for 1 month. Just only, okay.
All right, so this matter will come before us. I think we do need to, and I'm very interested in setting up a structure for this discussion, and I would ask that the RAC identify, if possible, several representatives, so that we could then schedule a meeting, which I'd like very much to be part of, on these revisions. So let me ask Ms. Segura if you would please take the leadership role here in scheduling, in both organizing and scheduling a meeting. Will you do that, please? All right, thank you. Now we have before us the matter of the approval of our minutes at the November 19, 2009 board meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Is there discussion? Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Let's see. Now, we have the report of the Writers Advisory Council. Is there a report? Oh, there she is. The chairperson Zinkel is here. We now will hear your report.
Thank you, Chairman Graham and members of the board. I am pleased to present you with the Writers Advisory Council report for December 2009. At our December 2nd meeting, we had a panel discussion featuring Craig Simpson from ATU Local 689, Matt Bassett, one of the Virginia representatives to the Tri-State Oversight Committee, and Helen Liu, the WMATA Inspector General. Not surprisingly, the discussion focused heavily on safety. And Mr. Simpson did mention at the time that the union is looking at refocusing its efforts on safety, and I very much appreciated Ms. Jeter's comments of this morning. Coming from Green Bay, Wisconsin, an area with a strong tradition of unions, I think it's easy sometimes to forget that where the unions got started 80, 100 years ago wasn't so much around pay and leave and benefits. It was around safety and the types of things that were happening in factories and on railroads to workers. You can't support a family. You can't support your fellow members of the union or your employer if you're dead or injured. And, I think that kind of going sort of back to first principles like that is something that's really going to be helpful to both the authority and the riding public. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that become a beneficial relationship. Helen Liu also talked a little bit about the Inspector General's office, and folks had some questions for her about their accomplishments. And unfortunately, Ms. Liu isn't here today, and I just wanted to, on my own behalf, just say, there's an old adage, never start anything because no one will ever forgive you. I think sometimes we forget what a pioneer Ms. Liu really is here in accountability. There aren't a lot of strong inspector generals in local government at all, and she's really kind of breaking new ground here, and kudos to her for everything that she's done in the 2.5 years she's been with WMATA. Also, Mr. Bassett, there were a lot of questions from Mr. Bassett about the structure of the TOC, and I think in some we're all looking forward to having a more open process and having more opportunities for public input into the TOC, and also the TOC providing more input to the public, and that's something we're all looking forward to. Moving on, in addition to our panel discussion, we also approved two letters this month. One was a letter on budget options, while this letter had a certain degree of focus on fiscal 2011, in our role as an advisory group, we tossed a lot of things into the mix that may not really be feasible within the next 6 months, but hopefully can, have some influence, perhaps as we're looking at some alternative fare collection strategies and fairing options. So not just what can we do in the next 6 months, but what can the system really do looking forward? And it was good to hear some of the comments about see the presentation on the alternative fare collection strategy at the committee meeting just a few minutes ago, It really helped me to get a better sense of that project, and particularly if this is really intended to be a customer-facing effort, I would encourage the board and the authority to make every effort to engage the public early and often in this discussion to see that, what the public perceives as its needs and where the public's wants are actually reflected in that process. There was a copy of the letter attached to my board report, and I believe you had all received it separately as well prior to that. In addition, the RAC also approved a letter on encouraging local local jurisdictions. For once, we're telling other folks their business rather than y'all. And this letter was basically written to support this WMATA initiative to improve bus service and to help hopefully make bus service more efficient and effective throughout the system, and to get our local jurisdiction, our jurisdictional partners, to really step up and do the things that the authority needs to have happen in order to improve bus service. I believe you've also received copies of that letter by now. With regard to the bylaw amendments, obviously three of my fellow members of the RAC have already spoken to those, so I will not devote considerable time to those to that topic, aside to say that, I think that hopefully you got a little bit of a sense of what the RAC is like. We've got some folks who really believe in the system and really believe in what we're doing. And it's great to see them come out and get this energized about this issue, and I think it really reflects the amount of effort and time folks put into it. And I appreciate the desire of some of the board members to have more of a conversation with us on this issue. And I appreciate that you've already made a decision not to address them at this meeting, which is unfortunate because we really were earnest in asking that the board move on the things that they felt were non-controversial and to keep this process moving. And I would just reiterate that we did deliberate and discuss the issue of putting in a requirement that the chair of the RAC match the jurisdiction of the chair of the board. And we came to a decision as a group that that really wasn't what we thought was the best thing for our body. And I just wanted to reiterate on that issue that particular message. Next, as I think everyone will remember, at the November meeting, a gentleman named Michael Syndrome came and spoke about some of his concerns with WMATA. He also passed on some of the information he'd shared with the authority earlier and asked me to do what I could to help him. And I've listed off in my board report some of the things that I did, which, you know, in my capacity as chair of the Writers Advisory Council, there wasn't much I could do, but I did what I could. I would also like to acknowledge that one of our founding members, Susan Holland of Prince George's County, chose not to reapply for membership to the RAC. And I would also say that this is the last board meeting of 2009, and as such, it's the last board meeting of my term. I think it's been a challenging year for everyone in WMATA, and I hope that we've worked, I honestly do believe we've worked together to make the system better, and we'll continue to do so. And, you know, I think in situations such as this, it's often common for folks to sort of list off what they view as their accomplishments over the course of the year. And what I would say is one of the things I did very early on is I looked at the website and I said, you know, we're doing so much stuff right here, and it's not really reflected. Like, people go to our page on the WMATA page and you're not going to see it. So if you want to know what we've done this year, you can check out our website. It's pretty up to date now, and it's all there. And the board can go there, folks in the authority, folks from anywhere in the country and anywhere in the world who can get internet access can go to our webpage now and see what we're doing. And that's not perfect. Not everyone has solid internet access yet. We're still working on that. But it's at least it's a start. So hopefully that's a resource that will continue to live for a long time into the future. And since I'll be sticking with the RAC, I'll be in a good position to make sure that the website continues to stay updated. And with that, I am now available to answer any questions you may have.
Well, first, let me congratulate you on your tenure. I didn't realize this was your last meeting. This is not my last meeting. And so you may want to check on that, because I have January. Not that I'm counting the hours and minutes for that happy event, but you may actually be serving through January. I don't know. But that's if your term is, in fact, parallel to my term. But in any event, congratulations for all your work. This has been, we don't want to go on and on about what kind of a six-month period we've had here. We can do that at another time. But it certainly has been one of the most challenging periods in the history of this transit system. And it has fallen to you to be chair of the RAC, I wasn't going to say that anymore, chair of the RAC during this very challenging time. I do want to also say that I appreciate the specific suggestions that have come from the RAC in terms of budget initiatives to deal with our budget challenges, which, of course, is over and above the other things that I've alluded to. And we are carefully reviewing those suggestions, and I'm going to have a detailed response to you. Today I'm signing a more general response, but we're going to have a more detailed response. The RAC has come up with some very contributing ideas, and I'm sure that this is available to everyone. All the board members received it, and I commend it for their consideration. So it's been very, very helpful. Let me see if there are other board members who wish to say something. Mr. Linton?
Let me just say, this is your last board meeting.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let me just say, if this is your last board meeting, that I commend you for your enthusiasm, if nothing else. Obviously, your love for what you do and for the system is pretty obvious, and the enthusiasm that you have brought to your tenure as chair of the RAC has been well noted, and we appreciate it. And I also hope, as you suggested, that you will carry and continue to bring that enthusiasm to the RSC when you serve in the immediate future. And thank you very much for your team.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. Further comment or question? Thank you very much, Chairperson Zinkel. We appreciate your service.
Thank you.
Now, we neglected to have our final motion on the approval of the agenda. The motion is before us as amended. Is there discussion, discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of approving the agenda as amended, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the agenda is approved. Now we go to the report of the chairman, and I have still several things. Just before I forget, I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss personnel matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6C, contractual matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6D, and legal matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6B. Is there a second to the motion? It's been seconded by, who was it? Seconded by Mr. Giancola, who is now representing the District of Columbia. Is there discussion, discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. I have also appointments to the Writers Advisory Council, and I do now move that Kelsey Braymort be appointed to a term to expire December 31, 2012, that Carol Carter Walker, who appeared and testified this morning very, very well, that she be reappointed to a term to expire 12/31/12, both representing the District of Columbia. I further move that Chris Farrell be appointed to a term to expire 12/31/12, that Ron Whiting be reappointed to a term. Are these reappointments or are these appointments? Reappointments. These are all reappointments. Ron Whiting be reappointed to a term to expire 12/31/12. Victoria Wilder be reappointed to a term to expire 12/31/12. Representing Montgomery County, Maryland. And so these are the five reappointments. We have appointments also pending concerning Fairfax County, which will be the subject of action in possibly in the January meeting. Is there discussion on these five reappointments?
A second. Pardon me? You want a second?
Is there a second to the motion to reappoint?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Benjamin. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Then these five members are unanimously reappointed by action of this board of directors. And and I do want to acknowledge now Mr. Benjamin.
Mr. Chair, I understand that this is the very last meeting that Jack Requa is going to be with us at a full board meeting. Mr. Requa, stand up, Jack, so we can at least say. Jack has been one of those people who has been extremely dedicated to this authority, and I, for one, and I'm sure most, if not all, of the other board members will feel the loss of a person who's cared that much for who and what we are and has worked so hard for this authority, both during the many years that he led our bus system, after that when he took over as acting general manager in the interim before Mr. Cato arrived, and since that time when he has made his skills available to us in so many ways. I just got to say, as a personal thing, Jack is one of those people who knows how to say yes. So many places you go, you ask somebody for something, and they say no, because there's power in saying no and denying what you're looking for. Jack is one of those people who, anytime I went to him and said, Jack, I got a problem, can you help me? His answer was always yes. And he was always there trying to find a solution trying to find a way to take care of issues, trying to support his staff, and most of all, trying to support this authority. And that's the kind of attitude that's just critical for making places like this work. Jack, thank you so much for the many years that you've given to all of us, and in particular for the many times you've helped me personally.
And let me just add, as a board member who was here during that extraordinary time, truly extraordinary time, when you stepped forward to shepherd us through that very difficult period. And I know that everything that preceded that was intended as preparation for those moments. But I have a very fresh memory of how challenging all of that was. And this system survived at that point in time in very significant measure as a result of your talent and experience. And we are all grateful for that particular service, as well as everything else that Mr. Benjamin has described. Mrs. Hutchins.
I'd like to join the others in thanking you for your service. Jack, I think Mr. Benjamin's comments are really appropriate. I'd add to that I think your respect and love for the authority was very much reflected in your service and the manner in which you've worked not only with the employees but also with the board members. And I'd just like to extend my thanks as well as my best wishes for your ongoing future. Thank you.
Well, we're very grateful. Good luck. Thank you. Now, we now can proceed with our agenda, which takes us to the General Manager's Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. There are just a few things to mention today. As I mentioned earlier, the Federal Transit Administration this week is still conducting an accelerated safety audit that began on Monday and will run through today. The audit included, but was not limited to, interviews of Metro and Tri-State Oversight Committee personnel, a review of Metro safety committees, the status of our worker protection, correction action plans, reporting relationships, and communications. The audit also focused on the TOC and Metro's activities to resolve findings from the FTA's 2007 audit. The process used by TOC and Metro to ensure the implementation of safety correction actions and the communications and reporting of safety issues within Metro and out to the TOC. The FTA has offered us assistance through its state safety oversight program, through its consultants to support our efforts to identify strategic actions moving forward that would positively impact our safety program. As communicated earlier, this report and this audit, the findings should be published in late January or early February. With the holidays right around the corner, I'm taking a moment to let you know what we're planning in the terms of service levels. As I communicated to you via email, December 24th, as we all know, is Christmas Eve, which falls on a Thursday this year. We will operate our normal weekday services until midnight. However, history shows that ridership is light on December 24th, and we will only operate up to 6 car trains and services, and that will help reduce some of our costs. December 25th, of course, is Christmas, which falls on a Friday this year. This is traditionally one of the lightest ridership days of the year. Last year, for example, ridership was 71,133 people. To reduce our costs and to save monies, we will operate a Sunday schedule, meaning longer headways, and our hours of operation will be from 7 a.m. To midnight. December 31st is New Year's Eve, which falls on a Thursday this year. We will be extending our hours of operations, opening at 5 a.m., but remaining open until 2 a.m. Again, based upon ridership numbers from past New Year's Eve, we will use 6 car trains versus the 8 car trains, but we will have the later service based upon our experiences. January 1st is New Year's Day, which falls on a Friday this year and is a federal holiday. Again, to reduce our costs, we will operate a Sunday service, which means we will be open until 7 a.m., instead of 5 a.m., and we were closed at midnight instead of 3 a.m. Again, in looking at last year's and prior year's ridership numbers, we believe that will be at the same impact. This only occurs once every 7 years, where New Year's Day falls on Friday, which is an extended, normally an extended services, but based upon demands in the past, we are planning on closing early. On the bus side, we will operate a Sunday schedule for Christmas and New Year's Day, and Metro Access will provide its normal level of service. We will be doing additional holiday improvements to our rail systems and repairs and upgrades. Upcoming holidays beyond Christmas and New Year's, and I'm asking Dave Kukachek if he could briefly update you on what our plans are.
Good morning. Our first scheduled holiday work for 2010 will be Martin Luther King holiday. We will be working up in the Grosvenor area. Our plan is to begin shutting down service at about 10 o'clock. That would be Friday the 15th. We will have an outage in that area where there will be no service. We will actually provide service, rail service, to Medical Center and up to White Flint Station. And in between that area, we would provide bus shuttle service. Some of the areas that we're going to be addressing while we're up there, replacing several thousand feet of track. We've got aerial structure work that needs to be conducted, sealing of tunnel leaks. We have ventilation shafts that we need to get in there and work on this equipment as well. We're also going to be doing signaling work, as well as we will do portal work, which will require a lot of concrete work, and we will be replacing up to over 200 tons of ballast. Okay, shifting to the next outage we will be looking at is President's Day, which lies on February the 12th, and it would go, we were going to be targeting the Roslyn area. We have, as you know, the merge point there for the blue line, the orange line. We have the major switch assemblies there that have not been addressed in over 20 years, and so we're going to be working in that area. This will impact the throughput into Roslyn, so we will expect to have shuttle service at Courthouse, Pentagon, and Foggy Bottoms. This is a very, very critical area as well, as y'all know, because of the merge point there. We are talking about several thousand feet of track that's going to be replaced. We're going to be retorquing over 8,000 feet of track. We've got underneath the river, we're going to be doing about over 12,000 linear feet of drainage work underneath there, tunnel lighting, as well as signal work. In addition to emergency management is also going to be conducting a exercise with regional partners for response training throughout this time frame. During this was intended to kind of give you all an advance heads up of what's getting ready to take place. There's going to be a lot more outreach as far as, you know, communications, the actual outages of what's going to be taking place, the day-to-day activity. We will be working very aggressively with our media relations staff and trying to reach out to as many entities as possible. I'd just like to conclude that the attention to detail that we'll be working at this level is similar to what you'd seen on Columbus Day. These areas are very, very critical for us to address, and we also understand our obligation to communicate and effectively move our customers throughout this region during these interruptions.
Each month we recognize an employee who has performed an outstanding, you want to make a comment? To recognize employees who have performed in an outstanding manner, and I'm going to ask Dave to introduce that employee, and I ask you, Mr. Chairman, to join me in the center so we can hand out the certificate to the employee as well as for photo op.
Mr. Gary Denson, could you step up, please? Well, thank you. Our spotlight award for Mr. Denson, he is a senior rail operations supervisor for us. And in one word, his describe of his dedication is remarkable. Mr. Denson works on the Green Line. He's truly extraordinary. He works at all levels within our rail operations department, chief operations supervisor, regular supervisor. He has no problem, no hesitation, station manager, rail operations, terminal interlocking supervisor. He trains and he mentors a lot of other individuals. There have been just numerous staff internally that just have the most highest regard and recognition of this individual, of his dedication. So please join me in recognizing Mr. Gary Denson.
Mr. Albert.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Did you say that you're closing at midnight on New Year's Day?
Yes, that's what we were communicating. We were going to stay open later on New Year's Eve.
Later on New Year's Eve?
We're going to stay open until 2 a.m.
And close. So I think that might be problematic for the district. It's the start of a weekend. And I don't know that you've presented data that would suggest that less people will be coming into the district for that weekend. And we'd rather have it open at the normal Friday night, Saturday morning hours.
Versus
closing it at midnight.
We can go back and look at the schedule, but this is based upon ridership members that we've had in the past. That, for an example, as I mentioned on Christmas Day, there's like 71,000 people. I will get the number for this day and provide that information. Ultimately, it is a decision of the board, but based upon the numbers we've seen in the past, there's not the demand there. We do believe that the demand is there for the Thursday night, which is New Year's Eve. But
why would it be a board decision?
Well, it is an operational decision, and my operation numbers, my staff is telling me that we have very low ridership on that day. And
I think Mr. Albert is referring to the New Year's Eve. So is to the.
I'm referring to the Friday night, New Year's Day. Okay, it's Friday, start of a weekend. Lots of activities occur in the district on the weekend, particularly in some of our entertainment areas. And public transportation, access to public transportation is an integral part of that entertainment.
What I would do is right after this meeting is go back and look at 7 years ago when this occurred, all the numbers, and I understand the issues you're bringing up.
Right.
Our focus was just trying to match services based upon demand.
I'm not sure a comparison 7 years ago is the right comparison. I mean, their economy is totally different than it was 7 years ago. Lots of people are probably staying around rather than traveling far or field, and people still have to be entertained. So I would appreciate a revisiting.
I would do so and have to revisit this very quickly because we're not talking about very much time, and we will do that.
Great, thanks.
And let me, I'm sorry I got a little confused there because, you know, the days are sometimes the mornings and so on and so forth. But you were perfectly clear, Mr. Albert. But let me just add my concern about the 2 a.m. closing on New Year's Eve. And while you're checking on this, if you could get back with us with information in terms of what a typical New Year's Eve is like. Because for many of our neighborhoods in the District of Columbia, that is the time when people are out late enjoying the particular holiday. So anyway, can you get back to us on both issues? So
absolutely,
there will be an issue about New Year's Day and an issue about New Year's Eve, however you consider it, whether it be morning or evening. Okay? All right. Mr. Zimmerman.
This points to a question that I was surprised not to see addressed in your report, Mr. Cato, and I don't see actually on the agenda. You sent us a memo within the last couple of days indicating that the latest numbers for the budget for the current fiscal year have, as people have been saying, have in fact worsened. You provided a new number, something in the neighborhood of $40 million of a projected current year gap, which will require, as you said, some immediate action. I could understand you're looking at what you're describing for the New Year's Day weekend, for instance, in that context, that you're going to be looking at some extraordinary actions necessary to keep the agency in the black in the remaining half of the fiscal year. But you didn't talk about that at all in your report. I don't see it anywhere on the agenda, and I'm wondering how it is the board would be taking any of the actions that would be necessary. I mean, this particular one you mentioned would be yours by discretion unless the board wanted to change it. Some of the actions, though, would require board action, and in all of them, obviously, are, you know, significant issues. So when, I mean, assuming that that isn't to wait, unless I misunderstood and that's to wait till January, how is that to be dealt with?
Well, it was our intent to address some of the impacts from a personnel standpoint, first with you in closed session, and then for me to inform you where I see that we are. This is recent numbers that we've come up with, and it's the latest, and I thought I can take many of the actions administratively, but some of those actions will require board approval. And Carol, if you could you help me on the aspect of the dates of those?
Let me interject here that these matters are scheduled for executive session. We will, as you know, under our board procedures, resume the meeting if there are any actions that we have to take following an executive session. And I think at this point we should hold to our agendized meeting in executive session on these issues and then return. We could be back into session in a very brief period of time with any actions that are contemplated.
Well, let me try to understand better, because I definitely don't understand this. I can understand that there might be certain personnel actions which would be appropriate to discuss in executive session. I do not see how they have much to do with a $40 million budget gap. I know that I have seen a memo that we all just received that outlines the extent of the problem and a plan for reducing it, which for the most part, as far as I can tell, doesn't involve anything that would be a matter for closed session, I assume would be public knowledge. You know, the major elements are things like changing, you know, funding on certain capital, parts of the capital program, preventive maintenance, a lot of the familiar things people go back to, as well as reductions in rail service and bus service. Now, all of those are things that we would normally discuss in open session, and about which there would be much public interest. So are you telling me that we're going to have that full discussion after closed session when we come back later this afternoon?
The discussion that I've had with the general manager concerning this matter was that there are impacts on personnel issues beyond specific reductions that I just don't think it's appropriate to have that discussion right now. However, I think it is very likely that we will be returning to board session following the executive session, and I would ask that any further discussion on this occur during that period of time.
So just again to be clear, should I anticipate that later this afternoon when we come back, we will be discussing a $40 million budget cut in the current fiscal year?
I think that is quite accurate and likely.
Okay, well,
all right, thank you.
Those who care know that.
I'm going to move the agenda at this point. Let's see. We now proceed to our report on our administrative items, and we have a total of 10 administrative items. There are questions from the District of Columbia on items 3, 5, 8, 9, and 10, which I would like to proceed on separate from a motion to approve in block. But if there was a motion to approve in block, items 1, 2, 4, and let's see, I guess we would have 6, 7, okay, 1, 2, 4, 6, 7, can be the subject of a motion to approve in block if such a Mr. Benjamin?
I'm prepared to make that motion so long as I have the ability to make a quick comment on both 6 and 7, which I support, but want to make a comment.
Well, we may as well proceed if that's going to be the case. Let's have, is there a motion to approve and initiate? This is like the old days. I remember how we used to read all of these. Is there a motion to approve and initiate an award of contract for boom truck and sole source contract to rehabilitate inspection truck?
So moved.
It's been moved. Second. Is there a second? Is there discussion? Discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it. Number one is approved. Is there a motion to approve to initiate an award contracts for medical review officers?
So moved.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion, discussion, discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it. Number two is approved. Number three is there a motion to approve and initiate an award contracts for cross ties and rail lubricators?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Albert, seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. And the question there from the District of Columbia is, since cross ties are an annual maintenance item, why don't we purchase them through multi-year contracts to obtain a lower price per tie?
That is one of our strategic efforts that we're working on at this phase, is trying to get an extended contract platform for this. But at this point in time, we just don't have the structure in place to push out a long-term contract. The other component that we were also, why we're wanting to kind of buy on an annual basis, is that we are looking at the use of concrete ties here. And if that proves to be successful, we would like to not enter into a contract for wood whenever we can replace with a concrete product, which will give us better life than what we have, currently have.
So the answer to the question is that you're anticipating the ability to have multi-year contracts in the future on this issue?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it. And number three is approved. Number four is the approval to modify contract for rail modeling software. Is there a motion?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Is there discussion, discussion, discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it. And number four is approved. Number five, is there a motion to approve to modify contract for audio frequency track circuits?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Albert. The question on number five is, was this a consultant design or an in-house design? If it's a consultant, does WMATA have a valid claim for the design omission that is giving rise to these costs? If it is a consultant, why are we not pursuing an omission claim?
Mr. Chairman, I do not know that answer right off the top of my head. I do know that the design and the contract, what they spec'd out, is done in combination with the agency as well as with our services, but I would have to go back and look into the contract to see how it was submitted originally.
Would there be a problem from your vantage point in putting this matter off until January so that we have an answer to that question?
That would not be a problem.
Is there objection to putting this matter off until the January meeting? Hearing none. Item number five is put off to the January meeting. Is there a motion on item number six to approve to modification in contracts to delete concrete coating?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Is there discussion? Discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Benjamin.
My request here is that there is a difference between what the actual BAIS says and what the title here says for both 6 and 7, and the title in the agenda is substantially better than the one in the administrative item. This is a request that you please make the titles somewhat explanatory. I understand you can read the rest, but when you have something that says, and if you look at administrative item number 6, it says, modify FP7029 to delete coding. That's almost totally meaningless to almost anybody except somebody who knows what contract FP7029 is. To the degree that we can get rid of references to contracts that we don't know anything about, that's probably useful, and it's helpful to have just enough words in there so we know what it is that we're approving, and if this becomes part of a file so that people can figure out what it is they're looking for. Same thing if you look at the next one, modify FN5009 for closeout. I don't have the foggiest idea what we want to close out, though I will agree that when it made it to the agenda, presumably the Office of the Secretary changed it enough so that you have some idea what you're closing out. Okay?
Is there further discussion on number six? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. Number six is approved. Number seven, is there a motion to approve modification and contract for rehab of station domes and platforms?
So moved.
So moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Is there discussion, discussion, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. Number seven is approved. Number eight, is there a motion to approve modification of existing contract for legal services?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. The question, oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Hewlett, I beg your pardon. Good. Seconded by Ms. Hewlett. The question here is the board is asked to add $250,000 to a labor law consultant contract, but is provided with no information as to the hourly billing rate, the name of the individual or the firm doing the work for WMATA, or the term of the existing contract. We would desire this information before approving this motion.
We will.
The speaker back on. Mr. Chairman, we will provide that information in closed session. We do have it. We're ready to give it to you.
Okay, good. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it.
Was there a motion?
Yes.
Yes, there was.
Is there a motion to ratify procurement for document restoration services? This is item number nine.
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Ms. Hewlett. All right. The question from the District of Columbia. WMATA has provided incomplete information on why the landlord or adjacent tenant's insurance company is not responsible for this damage. Also, is it necessary to recreate paper files when electronic ones have been created?
Good question.
See, these DC people are on the ball here. Is there an answer to that question?
I don't have the information on the specific lease that is the first question, but we can provide that. But the basis is that the lease did not provide that that issue, that reimbursement issue on flooding. So we can provide that information. On the second question, I think that's, again, a USDOT compliance issue, but we will follow up with the specific requirements for the electronic requirements.
Is there a problem with putting this matter off until January?
Yes.
There is a problem. Okay. Then,
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Benjamin.
May I suggest that, first of all, I understand we should be getting the compensation from the building next door. Is that right? That's where the problem was?
We had expected that, but that's not what's happening. We actually have getting the compensation reimbursement back from our own insurance claim.
Well, why is it that we're not getting it from the people who caused the damage?
Because that's the issue with the lease. And I can have...
Our lease for our building, for the building we're in,
yes.
Says we can't claim it from somebody else?
Yes, my name is Lisa Cooper Lucas. I'm the manager of medical services. And what we're asking for happened in a timeline that really created the problem that exists today. When the sewage dump was discovered, the files had been degrading over the weekend. And as we went through the debate with the bank that was presumed to have created the problem, as well as the tenant of the landlord who our plumbers discovered hadn't sealed the pipes appropriately, there became a great debate between attorneys and the landlord. Suffice it to say that the attorneys determined that no one was really going to take responsibility between the bank and the landlord, at which time we were notified by the Department of Transportation that they were coming in to do a drug and alcohol audit of our records, which required us to move expeditiously. We had already acquired two estimates, but they didn't allow us to have access to the records, which we had to have immediately under federal regulations. So we found another company who was willing to create an immediate website once they removed the documents from the premises and began to restore them, recognizing that those records that had been severely damaged needed to be restored immediately so we could then access them online. So we then went through the process of trying to restore as many as possible. And so by February and the audit, we had restored a lot of the files as well as rehab the facility. We had to put up new walls. We had to take up carpeting, et cetera. So at this point, this situation financially has lasted for a year almost to date because the sewage dump happened in December of last year. So we're asking for approval of this, and we've also been in negotiations with our insurance company in reference to fulfilling the need to pay this debt so that we could move forward with any additional negotiations with our attorneys so that we could see if we can recoup some of the funds.
Okay, so what I think I'm hearing is we need to move ahead quickly in order to have the records available, and particularly because there's going to be an audit.
No,
right?
We've already had the audit, which I can tell you we passed exceptionally well and have been identified as the best in the country in terms of our drug and alcohol compliance.
And so why is there a big rush right now?
Because the whole restoration process started June 30th, and we owe the people who've done the restoration money to finish the process.
So you're saying you're asking us to ratify something that has already occurred?
That is in the process of occurring. The restoration of the records is ongoing at this point. It's not complete.
Okay. Well, if you do undertake things where you're asking essentially for us to ratify something, it's useful for us to know that you've already done it. I would, in terms of the second part of that, I don't know how many times I've heard from people in this authority that they need hard copy of things, and that's because they need a signature on it. Almost everybody accepts electronic signatures at this point. I suspect the U.S. Department of Transportation does, and if they don't, we ought to be working on it. So as you do the second part of what you promised, would you please look into that?
Yes, I will.
Further discussion? Mr. Zimmerman, Mrs. Hutchins.
I think Mr. Benjamin's questioning brought out a fairly significant fact, which is we're not being asked to fund something. We're being asked to ratify something that's already been funded. Now, this may be because it's in the nature of an emergency, something for which the general manager had the authority to spend $344,000 without permission, and that may be the case. It's a big agency. Maybe that's necessary. If that's the case, though, such action should be very clearly identified. This is a more significant matter than the ones Mr. Benjamin earlier identified, but it's the same point. We need to know what it is, and anyone looking at the agenda needs to know what it is. A funding item is an important matter by nature, especially for something that's more than $100,000. And if it's a matter that is simply ratifying an action that the manager took on his own authority because it was necessary, it should be clear it's that kind of item, and it should say this is a matter in which the manager had to take emergency action and is asking for ratification. There should be a standard form for that because, we're spending a lot of time on this now, and we still don't actually have an answer to the question that you originally asked, which is, why is it we're liable and not somebody else is liable? And I can understand that might not be something that could be discussed here, in which case I could accept that answer. But there clearly is a question about liability that should be addressed at some point, even if we have no choice but to pay this bill now.
Ms. Hutchins?
Ms. O'Keefe is going to answer something and maybe clarify before I ask my question.
Ms. O'Keefe?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes, Mr. Graham, we are. And have been throughout evaluating our ability to go against either the landlord or the adjacent tenant for negligent actions.
Well, of course, a question that comes to my mind now that we're discussing this is, why is this coming to us in December? We meet every single month. I mean, why wasn't this brought to our attention when the emergency occurred?
The emergency occurred in December. The assumption was made by all parties involved that the liability would rest with the bank.
I thought you said the emergency occurred in June.
No. I said we started the restoration process.
Oh, a year ago.
Right.
All right.
But in December...
It didn't occur this month.
No, December 2008. is when
these... When did you start spending pursuant to this need?
We started spending almost immediately. I think in the month of February, we began to restore the carpeting, the walls. We had to clean our exam rooms and some of the other areas.
Well, let me ask my question a slightly different way. Why hasn't this been brought to our attention before this?
It hasn't been brought because of some assumptions that were made along the way. The first assumptions were that the place where the sewage dump originated would be liable. When that didn't happen, then other assumptions were made about the landlord. At that time, there was a previous manager of medical services, and in order to keep business going, she called in other restorative companies. By the time I became manager, it became apparent that things were still hanging in the breeze, and so we began to address them immediately, which put us on another timeline. In addition to that, we had to do some more restorative things prior to the Department of Transportation coming in to do an audit. So that escalated things in the month of February, and March we had the audit. April, we continued looking for someone to restore the files that were degrading due to the dump. And at that time, we were advised by Environmental Services that we couldn't go in our file room without a mask, and we had an ionizer placed in the file room as well. So it happened as a result of a combination of things. When we realized that we hadn't been addressing it the way it needed to be addressed, we moved on it quickly with the assistance of General Counsel, and we began to understand that we needed to take responsibility for moving forward with the restoration of the paper files because we would lose that information, and we did create an electronic process for retrieving those files with the company that we used, and they were the only company that made that available.
I think you've given some very, very good answers, and I appreciate very much having all that information, but it's not responsive to the question I asked. The question I asked was, why wasn't this board told about this sooner than this December meeting? But you have answered with some very helpful questions, which are helpful issues and information, which I appreciate. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and this matter is approved. Now we proceed to item number 10, which is the approval. Is there a motion to approve an amendment to the budgets for the Arlington County reimbursable projects? Mr. Zimmerman has made the motion, and Mrs. Hutchins has seconded. The question here is, can we simply confirm that the $304,000 reduction in the non-TIF funds for the Shirlington Station project are all Virginia local or state funds or federal earmarks for Virginia projects? Can we have that confirmed?
I can confirm that. I don't have any documentation
but
I can confirm that, yes.
Thank you very much. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? All right, Mr. Benjamin.
Just follow on that. It would be useful then also for the resolution to say that,
okay. Because
the resolution talks about excess TIF funds, and we are talking about Arlington or Virginia funds. So if you could revise the resolution to match the answer to that question. And the same thing on the funding impact. You have Arlington TIF funds which contribute to this, but they're not shown at all in the funding impact. So if the table there could be revised, and in the future, if you would watch those things, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Cato, may we assume those revisions as part of what we're about to vote on?
Yes.
Okay, good. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. And item number 10 is approved. Now, we have our reports from the jurisdictions. Mr. Albert for the District of Columbia.
No reports.
Mr. Solomon for the State of Maryland.
No reports.
Mrs. Hutchins for the Commonwealth of Virginia. All right, good. We've had our motion for executive session. Let me say, for the purposes of the media, that I'm going to say that at 2 o'clock, We will have some notice for the media on the issues that have been already identified as under discussion at the executive session, which relates to greater budget challenges for the current fiscal year. By 2 o'clock, we will either have reassembled or we will have an announcement of what our intentions are at 2 o'clock. So that if those of you who are interested in this particular issue, you could either be here at 2 o'clock or be able to obtain that information. So this meeting now stands. Mayor?
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in that I concur with my colleague from Virginia, Mr. Zimmerman's concerns about going into executive session to discuss budgetary items that I understand from the CO in terms of personnel, but I've seen nothing yet that convinces me that this is a matter for executive session. So while we're going to executive session, I want the record to show that I oppose. Thank you.
Well, let me say, I very much appreciate that point of view, Mayor Yule. And, of course, this board has the ability to withdraw into executive session and return immediately to its board meeting. But I think that because this has been scheduled in this way on the advice of the general manager, we should proceed to at least have that discussion in executive session. And but we have all of our options available to us. Mrs. Hudson.
I would hope that in the future we would advertise this as an item on the agenda, the item which we would be seeking approval on, and the executive session address the personnel items that would not be appropriate for public session. I think that leaves the clarity for everyone about the item, and it also gives us the oversight as to the discussions we're having in the executive session.
Well, I think that's a very good point. And I, for one member, as one member of this board, would be open to the notion of identifying our executive session agenda items. But as you know, Mrs. Hutchins, that has not been the practice to do that. But we certainly could change the practice so that we would specifically identify the items for executive session discussion. But I think what we have done today is very much in keeping with the way we proceeded on these matters. Under these rules. So well, that's another matter we can take up. There being no further discussion, this meeting is now stands in recess.